Boop, and welcome to Unapologetic Live on this most auspicious Thursday. I'm Amala Panobi, your host. We got Taylor here as well.
What's going on?
Happy to be here, guys. Hope you are happy as well. Let me know in the comments down below in the live chat, how's your Thursday going? Mine is going fantastic. It's been full of haters. You know, we did this Dylan Mulvaney video. Dylan responded by making a TikTok video on his own platform, and I made a response podcast. And the leftist haters who would want to call me a transphobe and a bigot and tell me to kill myself are just relentless. It's been a beautiful thing to witness how hive mind truly works when they are trying to come after somebody. So you guys can check out some of the messages that I've been getting by going to my Instagram. If you'd like to follow me there at the Amala Panobi, you can follow me at all other platforms by simply typing in my name and finding me there. Let's get into what we're going to talk about today. There's a number of things. There was an article made by hillreporter.com talking about Dennis Prager and some recent comments that he made on the Dennis Prager show, the radio show that he hosts every day that I'm sure some of you are fans of. This will be in relation to hate crimes and whether or not many of them are hoaxes. And if so, who are the people who are committing these crimes of creating these fake hoaxes? After that, we're going to talk about a BuzzFeed article that I found this morning, actually that was sent to me. So shout out to the person who sent this to me on Twitter, of 21 unwritten rules for black people. Let's see if they actually apply. Let's see if these are rules that I practice and abide by in my daily life, and why some people may think these rules exist. And for a second, we might touch on everything that's happening with Chris Pratt right now. It's been an interesting story, and we saw James Gunn come in and back him today. So we'll talk about that as well. Let's get into this document, this article from hillreporter.com. Here's the title. Watch. PragerU founder says odds are overwhelming. Black students are behind hate speech on campuses. Let's take a look. So let's first show the video in question before we get into this article. Here's the video in question of Dennis. Oh, look at him. America's grandfather. And here's what he had to say on his show.
This is a prediction. I rarely make predictions. What I talk about is what people need to do, not my predictions for the future. But I have a prediction. Twitter will be flooded with hate. And a lot of it will come from people on the left who want to show how hate-filled it is. It's like the race hoax industry. If you see a noose on a college dorm of a black student, the odds are overwhelming that the noose was put there by a black student. If you see the N-word on a dormitory building, the odds are overwhelming that a black student actually did that. We're filled with race hoaxes. Why? To show how racist the country is, we need these hoaxes. Jussie Smollett is the most famous. That's what we're going to have on Twitter, plus genuine hate. You'll have hate made up, and you will have genuine. That is correct. That is the price of free speech. That is entirely accurate.
Okay. So I'm curious. Let me know if you heard anything that sort of made you see red during that video, because I think it was pretty reasonable to say some of the things that he was saying. Let's start off with the first part of his statement, talking about how we're going to see this overwhelming amount of hate on Twitter, whether it be real or fake, and it will most likely be a mixture of both. I would say that that is largely true. As we all know and believe for the most part, tell me if you disagree in the comments down below, the demand for racism, sexism, bigotry, the demand for it is so much larger than the supply in this country in particular. Now, if you want to talk about other countries, we can talk about how racist other countries are comparatively to the United States. But the demand for racism here and bigotry and all these forms of discrimination and oppression is so much higher than the supply. And this is why we have to have these race hoax and stories that pop up that people use to support this narrative that they've created. Because if you really go out into our modern society and meet people and talk to them and talk about these issues of race and sexuality and gender, by and large, you're going to find people who are pretty accepting and tolerant. They just don't want to be told what to do, and they don't want their lives bothered by these ideas and these social issues. So again, I think racism is few and far between. very hard to find. We talked about this on a previous episode, and I asked you guys, how many racist people do you really know in your lives? And I believe 70% of you are like, I don't have anybody who's close to me or in my life that is racist in any way, shape, or form. So that, to me, sort of shows where we stand as a society, yet there seems to be a large group of people, or maybe we can call them a fringe group of people, that want to paint a depiction of this country that shows that America is racist, the people who live here are racist, specifically white males in this country are born with inherent racism, unconscious bias, or the direct outward bias towards people of different skin tones and backgrounds. And come on, it's not true. And there's very little evidence to support it, although we are conjuring evidence now, seemingly, because that's how the narrative prevails. That's how we let people know, and we, quote, educate them about these issues. And I wanted to look into this and sort of look at the claim here that if a hate crime is reported, most likely it was actually committed by a black student or a student of the background that the hate crime is claimed to be against. And of course, there's a lot of evidence to support this. Now, it's really hard to look into hate crimes in today's day and age because apparently everything's a hate crime. I made an episode of my show talking about how men are men and women are women, and apparently that's a hate crime and that's hate speech and all that fun stuff. So how we define a hate crime has morphed. People are far more sensitive to talking these issues and the things that are being said around these issues, and a lot of people will jump to say that a hate crime has been committed against them when it hasn't. On a personal note, take issue with the whole idea of there being a thing called a hate crime. That is something that is so difficult to prove. It is something that only the person in that situation would ever know what would happen or why it happened. And to have these situations where you bring people through the justice system and through our court system and then somehow try to speak to their bias in a situation is a really difficult thing to do. I feel the same way about hate speech. It's just speech, and it's speech that you don't like. Now, if you've committed a crime like assault, battery, homicide, even if we want to go to the more extreme cases, you should go to jail for that. You should be prosecuted for that, and you should go through our legal system and get what is coming to you. But when we bring in these ideas of hate crime and hate speech and bias attached to the crime, prosecute the person for the crime they committed and move on. If you would please. I would love to live in a society where we just did that and moved on. And I find that the talk around hate crimes really just makes us sensitive to it. I was reading articles that say, you know, hate crimes have gone up exponentially over the past decade. Come on. Our society is not getting more racist. It is really not getting more bigoted, unless you want to count towards white people. But nobody wants to have that conversation. And apparently hate crimes can't be committed against white people, so sorry, guys. But yeah, have hate crimes really gone up in the past decade? I don't think so, and I don't think there's much evidence to support it. Now, we can talk about the hate crimes that we are aware of, the Jussie Smollett's, you know, with the MAGA country and the noose and pouring bleach on me while I was just trying to get home with my Subway. Oh, wait, you hired two Nigerians to do that to you? And then you were totally fine with the prospect that two white men could have been arrested for committing this crime against you, but then you got caught. You created this whole hate crime hoax to fuel this idea that there is racism in America when there was no racist act committed against you. So we have Jussie Smollett. You got Bubba Wallace this whole ESPN thing, the race car driver who said, there's a noose in my garage. I found a rope hanging there. This is completely a hate crime against me. And who jumped on it? The FBI said, we must get down to the bottom of this. We must find this hateful white supremacist who left this rope in Bubba Wallace's garage. Oh, wait. All the garages have ropes? Oh, wait. It's been there for years? Oh, wait. Somebody wasn't threatening you with lynching you? Sorry, guys. And did ESPN sort of go back and try to make this right? Somewhat. They did post about it not being a hate crime. You're seeing this article right here. But in a lot of ways, ESPN just swept this under the rug. I even think they came out with a tweet about a year later talking about a year after the Bubba Wallace incident, we should be talking about racism. Huh? What do you mean we should be talking about racism from the fake incident that was created by the race car driver who wanted to fuel, again, this false narrative? And, you know, Bubba Wallace and Jussie Smollett aren't exactly the blackest people walking around in America. It's like, oh my gosh. It's like when we hear Sean King talk about racism against black people. What's his nickname? Talcum X? You guys aren't exactly the best representation of just like black America. And I can say that apparently because I'm mixed as well. We have very similar skin tones. So my goodness. Then we had the Emory University problem where the N-word was spray painted on walls. The swastika was spray painted on the offices of Jewish workers at Emory University. Come to find out, it was this man by the name of Raley Gordon Jr., who happens to be black as the night, who went and spray painted these racial slurs on the campus. He was simply a disgruntled employee who, again, wanted to fuel a fire, fuel a narrative, and bring discomfort to Emory University. So there's no shortage of false reporting of hate crimes. Here's a whole article on it on adiverseeducation.com. You can go through. And they cite all these different instances on university campuses, which is what Dennis talks about specifically, where students have come forth, black students specifically, have come forth and said, look at this horrible thing that happened to me. Look at the threats that I've been getting. Look at what's happening on Twitter with all these people yelling and screaming at me. And then they do this investigation, and the investigation finds, oh, well, actually, that was a black student who did that to promote a narrative. There is even a website called fakehatecrimes.org. Now, you're looking at this website and you're like, was that made in like 2004? It looks so janky. But if you go through it, they're on number 465 of faked hate crimes. And all of them, here are the titles of all the hate crimes. Here are the citations for articles that are reporting on them. And we can just click on any given one of these and go straight to the article about a claim made of a racially motivated hate crime that happened to be false. So this one is a police dispute claim of racially motivated vandalism against a black Michigan student. So this one happens to have happened on a university. And guess what? The destruction of property, the vandalism was actually committed by a black student, and it was not a real hate crime. Now, are there real hate crimes that happen? I put that in quotes because you know how I feel about the entire idea of there being a hate crime. Certainly, these things happen. Have we now created an increase or an influx of hate crime reports because we're now in such a sensitive society where if you say something like all lives matter, you've committed a hate crime? I would go as far as to say yes, that is where we are at now. And progressives don't have a lot to back them when they talk about racism in America and this idea of systemic oppression. So what do you do when you don't have evidence to back it? You create that evidence. You mold this dialogue surrounding the things that you are talking about, and you try to convince people that that is, in fact, the reality. I went and was trying to read about the surge in hate crimes, and here's this article out of bestcolleges.com that you can go and look at. What you need to know about hate crimes on campus. It goes through, it gives you the definition. It talks to you about the rate of hate crimes increasing every year. Look at that. From 2010, we're down here to about 1,200 hate crimes. Up to 2019, nearly 2,000 hate crimes. Why, in such a progressive, forward society, are we getting more racist and more hateful and more bigoted towards people? I'd speculate that we're not. And we can look back at our society and look at all the progress that we've made. And of course, most of the hate crimes are in relation to race, because those are the conversations we're having right now. We're having racialized conversations, of course. Then we have second. Second is a sexual orientation. Guess what? And I'm going to go ahead and put out my prediction. What did Dennis say? I rarely make predictions, but I'm going to make a prediction today that in months from now, maybe even next year, you're going to start getting reports saying that hate crimes against LGBTQ+ people are going up exponentially in a rate that we've never seen before in this country. That's what you're going to hear. Because who's the victim right now of the progressive left? The victim is transgender people. The victim is people who identify with LGBTQ+, and that whole marginalized group of people. So that's what we're going to see. Those are the reports that we're going to get. That's what the media is going to push forth. And then eventually, some way they'll find a way to say that you can commit a hate crime against somebody in the name of climate change or something like that. And that will be the next report that we start getting, because I feel like that's going to be their next endeavor as well. Now, this article from bestcolleges.com that states about the rising epidemic of hate crimes was reviewed by Angelique Jihan. Who is Angelique Jihan? Let's read about her. Angelique Jihan works to support and repair the connections people have to themselves, people have to themselves and their family, communities, and cultural practices. Angelique Jihan is a queer, Asian, gender binary, non-conforming parent. Oh my gosh, I just can't. That's all you really need to know. That's all you really need to know. Working with the Health and Healing Justice Committee of the National Queer and Trans Asian and Pacific Islander Alliance. This is what academia looks like today. So, of course, all these reports are going to tell you, look at the rise in hate crimes. Look at the rise in people identifying with different sexualities and different genders and those people being assaulted and being targeted on campuses and targeted on social media. Because that's the zeitgeist of today. That's what we're talking about. That's where progressives are. And yes, I do think that Twitter is going to increase in hate once we open up the floodgates and allow everybody to be on there. But it's not going to be real. In a lot of ways, it's not going to be real. It's going to be people going, look at this thing that I tweeted from my burner account that says the N-word. Elon Musk allowed us to have free speech on Twitter, and now the N-word is everywhere. Oh my gosh. And black people are going to be like, I don't care. Who cares? You weren't calling me the N-word. I don't care. And they're going to be like, look at this. I had to log into my other account after I tweeted this thing to show you the hate that is happening on Twitter, because they can't allow themselves to be wrong, and they will never admit that. So if the floodgates open and suddenly there's not an abundance of hate on Twitter and we're all just having meaningful conversations and going back and forth with each other, trying to debunk arguments or talking about the trending news of the day, they can't have that. That's too peaceful. That's too normal. It's too much a representation of how successful American values can be. And that disgusts them. So there's going to have to be hate, whether or not it's real or botted or just fake burner accounts that people are making to create hoaxes. That's what's going to happen. So this Hill Reporter article goes in and says, well, we've heard conservatives blame marginalized groups for their own oppression before, and specifically accusing them of faking hate crimes. And obviously is an attack on Dennis and an attack on the words that he said. But in this article, I don't find examples of you debunking anything that Dennis said. And it's, in fact, a very short article, probably because they couldn't find anything to debunk what Dennis said. All they could do was attack him on the words and say that he's a right-wing media commentator who's just postulating conservative values. So then debunk the argument. So then point out the times where hate crimes are happening and they're not hoaxes, and talk to me about the stats regarding that, and go and look up all these hate crimes where they are hoaxes and tell me why that's happening, and explain this massive phenomenon of people faking things against them that are racist, bigoted, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, whatever, and tell me why they're doing that.
Well, Amelie, you know PragerU is not a real university. You can't take courses at PragerU.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So every time that somebody writes a hit piece on PragerU, somewhere in the article there is something like this. And here it is in hillreporter.com. Prager University is not an educational institution. There are no classes, tuition, or degrees involved. We never said there was.
Busted. They totally got us.
You got us. I'm actually
going to. The jig is up.
I'm going to take the headphones off and I'm going to just leave the studio. Bye, guys.
We're outed.
Yeah. No, we're called Prager University because our 5-minute videos and the content that we create gives you something that universities do not give you and educates you on virtually anything you can really ever have questions on as far as it pertains to politics, sociology, the economy, lifestyle. And you don't get that from universities. So you leave watching PragerU videos more educated than you ever would leaving Harvard or Yale. That's why we call ourselves PragerU. So to go, they're not a real educational institution. You can't get a degree from them.
As though that debunks what he says.
Yes.
It's the definition of ad hominem.
Oh, it really is. It's just like, okay, do you have anything else to say? Do you have anything that actually criticizes what Dennis said in his video? And again, if any of you who are watching have a criticism of it, write it down below and we will address it. So that's all I had to say about all the Dennis Prager stuff. We're going to get into this BuzzFeed article that was sent to me this morning. Here it is. Black people are sharing the rules that they follow that most white people don't even know about. And this is so important. This is so important. So I am half black and half white. So I'll be able to comment on this from two different perspectives and tell you whether half of myself chooses to follow these rules and the other half doesn't or was completely unaware of them. Let's take a look. Rule number one. No matter how angry you get, you try and remain calm. If you raise your voice even a little, regardless of what you say or how you say it, you are instantly labeled an angry black woman and judged wrongly, even when you're right. Anonymous.
Amala, you spoke a little bit too loud when you said that. Could you...
So sorry.
Kind of sound like an angry black woman. Could you whisper?
I have never experienced something like this in my life. And in fact, I have made quite a stand making videos that are extremely expressive. And sometimes people would say higher in volume than the average person talks, definitely not in an inside voice. And I have never been called an angry black woman. So no, this is not applied to me. If you're a black person watching this right now and this applies to you, this whole caricature of an angry black woman is just to me, it's just a projection. You know, I rarely see people ever. I don't think I've ever heard anybody been like, that's just an angry black woman. That's all she is. Now, I'm sure there are people who do say that because there can be this sort of caricaturized idea of what you can be in any race. And let's make this clear. Stereotypes for any race, which there are thousands for every single race, they exist for a reason. They really do. Just like the Karen, which is this idea, this caricature of a white older woman who calls the manager. Why does that exist? Because it happens, and in today's day and age, it happens, and it's on video, and you can find hundreds of videos of this happening, and it speaks to a cultural stereotype. Blows my mind that people get so offended by things that are said because, you know, they can be true. Now, as far as angry black woman, I have not heard this enough in my life to have... to even think that this is a very common stereotype. But even if it is, often these things are based on actual encounters that people have. So have you heard the angry black woman stereotype, Taylor?
I mean, I've heard of it, but then, yeah, no real life examples come to mind, just like
right.
Certain TV characters or whatever.
I've heard of it. Like, I think Tyler Perry has like the Diary of an Angry Mad Black Woman or something like that. And that was a movie that I watched as a kid. And some of the caricatures in those movies are very clear and a clear depiction of this like angry black woman. But I rarely hear that as like something that white people say to characterize a black woman. If anything, I've heard that from black men characterizing black women. So yeah, stereotypes exist for a reason. Like, get over it.
White dads really do say it's not the heat that gets you,
right?
It's the humidity.
Right.
When they see their neighbor washing their car, they stop and say, "Can you do mine next?"
When they finish up at the restaurant, they go, "You're gonna have to roll me out of here in a wheelbarrow."
Exactly. So
come
they
on.
They exist for a reason. So we may not know any directly, but these stereotypes do exist.
Right. These stereotypes do. I'm sure they exist. I'm not going to say that this stereotype does not exist, even though it's something that I have not seen. But come on. Why are we so sensitive about everything? Everything just makes people want to like sit in fetal position and cry. Imagine if I did that every time I got a horrific comment or something that was hateful. Angry black woman is not even that horrible. It's just like, oh, you're a black person and you're angry. Oh my God, the horror, the racism. I get horrible comments on a daily basis, and it's not to say that that's a good thing to do. But if we, in this life, curl up and cry or get upset and offended every time something that we don't like is said, we'd all be sitting in fetal position crying our eyes out all day long. Because c'est la vie. That is life. That is life. Number two, my mother taught me to always ask for a bag and receipt, no matter how small the purchase, or you can be accused of stealing. I mean, there's really nothing to like push back on. This is just an anecdotal piece of information. By and large, this does not happen. Black people can enter stores and purchase products. Oh my gosh, crazy. And then walk out of the store with that purchased product and say, no, I don't need a bag or I don't need a receipt. There's not this massive epidemic of black people being having the police called on them for stealing. As much as the media and social media and progressives themselves would love for you to think that, it's not happening. So let's move on. Number three, as a black man, my father taught me when being pulled over by the police to pull your insurance and registration out of the glove box and keep it ready on your seat. That way you don't have to reach in the glove box when the police are at your window. Again, this is all contingent. All of this advice is contingent upon this narrative that as a black person and as a black man specifically, there is a constant target on your back. Do you know how disgusting that is to teach your kids that? And what's truly disgusting about it is the people who do teach their kids that are truly convinced by it. So I feel bad for them as well. To have to live in fear that much over police officers, which is something that I lived in for a very long time because of what I was taught, is a horrific reality. But it's not reality. The reality is that if you are a black man that gets pulled over by police officers and you sit there and you go, yes, sir, no, sir, what do you need? My registration? Okay, I'm going to grab that for you now. You grab it, you give it to them, they look at it, and they send you on your way. That's what happens in most police encounters. However, we do get encounters like Philando Castile, a disgusting display of a police officer doing the wrong thing in a situation. And I will admit that till the cows come home, of him going, you know, I do have a registered firearm in the car. I just want to let you know, sir, I'm going to reach for my wallet now. And the police officer shoots him. Horrible thing. It's on video. You can watch it. It is disgusting. It is a clear depiction of malpractice in policing, but it is not representative of what is happening on a daily basis in America. Philando Castile is not the depiction of what's going to happen to the average black person getting arrested. And you know what? We don't talk about when this happens to white people either. And there are some horrific videos of malpractice in policing happening to white people that are all over the internet if you just take the time to look at them. And yet we've still painted that it's just black men who experience this. False.
Yeah, and this whole rule is prefaced with as a black man, but a lot of people in the comments are saying I'm white and I grew up with this rule as well. This is kind of just general wisdom that however you slice it, you want to make the officer as comfortable as possible and not signal any kind of for quick movements or aggression. So, you know, I was taught like put your hands on 10 and 2, or if, you know, you don't want to be like reaching in the glove box as they come up to your car, but by the time they're there, have your hands somewhere they can see them, have your documents ready, or let the officer know that you're going to reach in. You know, it's like that's just general common knowledge. It's not, you don't have to racialize this general tidbit of wisdom that everyone with sense should know.
It's honestly just good practice. Like it's just a good practice to do. So you don't put yourself in a bad situation. That's the problem that I have with a lot of these discussions that we've had, is that on their face, a discussion around police brutality is not a wrong discussion to be having. You have people who are in our society that suddenly have an excess amount of power, definitely are the most powerful in the situation when you encounter them. We should be talking about whether or not that gives way to things like police brutality and what training we should have around that and how you should respond. But it's not a racialized discussion. We hurt ourselves when we make everything about race. And it just contributes to this polarity where no discussion is ever had about the issues that need to be discussed. Number four, as a black woman in a predominantly white area, I make a point of approaching staff first in stores when I walk in. I ask an innocuous question in a friendly, high-pitched voice, even if I don't need anything. They seem to feel safer around me and do not follow me around when I do that first. Alex, I'd like to take things that did not happen for 2000, please. This is not, oh my gosh. It is such a ridiculous thing to do something like this. You are honestly just like placing this upon yourself. This is a figmented reality that you are placing upon yourself in order to support this narrative. And I don't want to blame people who do this because they were like me 4 years ago. They got the same information that I got and are reacting in a very similar way that I did. But you do not need to do that. I want everybody who does something like this and is listening right now to stop for a minute. And tomorrow when you wake up in the morning, go, you know what? I'm just going to lead my normal life and do the things that I would like to do without having these prejudgments of how people are going to treat me, how whether or not I'll be followed in a store, whether or not the police are going to be called on me, and just go out and lead your life. And then when you make it to the end of the day and you hit your bed at night and you go, oh, wait, everything was fine and nothing happened to me. Take that as a lesson that maybe you should not allow people to fearmonger you into having this predisposition about just going to the store and shopping. This is ridiculous. It is a ridiculous thing to assume this every time you walk into a store. Number five, as a Black woman, I usually keep my college jacket in the car. If I have to go to the emergency room, I receive better treatment if doctors see that I have a higher education. Honestly, it's just like, how do you even respond to these anymore? It just doesn't make sense. It's again, just another thing that you're putting in the way of what you do every day because you have this preconceived idea of what's going to happen to you if you don't just act like every other normal person. The way that we stop these issues that we're having surrounding race is to stop talking about it. It's to stop doing these little extra steps that you feel you need to do in order to save yourself and keep yourself in safety. Because guess what? You'll be safe regardless. And that will be the case. And these representations in these videos where that is not the case are few and far between. You have a higher likelihood of being struck by lightning at this point than going through one of the situations that you see in those videos. And it's just sad that so many people have watched this enough and seen this enough and heard the narrative enough to adopt these daily practices. This is not a daily practice because she's talking about going to the emergency room. I would hope that's not a daily practice for anybody, but to adopt this in your brain as just something that is constantly in your thoughts is scary. Let's see. Number six. I'm from Louisiana, where they still have sundown towns. Avoid them at all costs. If you have to pass through at night, make sure you have a full tank of gas so that you don't have to stop. For those of you unaware of sundown towns, they are towns where they are predominantly white, and that in the past, during the Jim Crow era, these towns had laws that kept Black people from being able to live in them. Guess what, guys? This is a great announcement. I think I'm the first person to say this in 2022. Sundown towns do not exist. The laws around sundown towns don't exist anymore. You cannot keep Black people from moving into your town other than having like a random realtor who just refuses to sell to a Black person. And if that exists, that's, again, a small, marginal group of people who decide to be racist in their daily life for some reason. But the laws regarding sundown towns and this sort of redlining thing, they don't exist anymore. It's not allowed. Turns out we sort of decided as a society that racism wasn't cool, kids. Don't do the whole racism thing and lead your normal lives, and America will be better off because of it. We decided that quite a long time ago. But I guess a group of people thinks that we have not decided that and that these institutions and things still exist. They don't exist. I even went in to do some reading on these whole sundown towns things to like find out why somebody would say that these are still in existence. And apparently people are saying there's like a second generation sundown town where it's not legally that they don't keep Black people there. It's just socially and culturally that they don't do that. No. And it pairs itself with these things like white flight, that once a Black person moves into the neighborhood, all the white people move out. If that was the case, Obama's neighborhood, Patrice Kohler's neighborhood, all the white people would be flying away. Because these people who cried about racism, Obama and Patrice Kohler's the founder of Black Lives Matter, move themselves right into white neighborhoods. And I'm talking million-dollar, multi-million-dollar houses right in the middle of these white neighborhoods. Where did all the white people go? They're still there, chilling with the Black Lives Matter activist. So, oh my gosh. You just have to remind yourself that there are people that benefit from convincing you of these realities. And they benefit in a way that we talked about on yesterday's episode, this idea that if you are disempowered and you feel like you lack self-worth, you're easy to manipulate. And the very same people who say you're not worth anything in this country, the white people hate you, the capitalists hate you, this whole system is pitted against you, they go, but I can help you if you just vote for me, you know, come election time. Just I'll fix all of this. And yet every 4 years, the same narrative persists and they're still here to help you again. Where's the help? Where's the changes that they're making? What are they doing for you and for your community? Nothing. Because there's nothing to be done when you create something that doesn't exist. Okay, number 7. I am a white woman, relatively new to my mostly white... relatively new to my mostly white neighborhood. When I take a walk for exercise, I always walk in the middle of the street, not too close to houses on either side. I wear reflective gear and avoid staring too closely at any of the houses. I often think of Ahmaud Arbery while I'm walking. I wish I could just, like... reenact some of this stuff and think about how ridiculous this sounds to wake up every morning and be like, okay, I want to go for a walk today. I better put on all my reflective gear, which is something that everybody does anyways, so as to not get hit by cars and things of the like. But I'm going to put on reflective gear. I'm going to make sure I just stare straight ahead at where I'm walking. I'm not going to look over to the side because somebody might think I'm robbing them by looking at their house and come and shoot me. No. And if we look at the Ahmaud Arbery case, what a cluster that case is, because this young man was, quote, jogging in a neighborhood that happened to be miles and miles away from where he actually lived. Okay, so maybe he was going on a very long, I don't know, 40-mile jog to there and back. Sure. But going through houses, we saw the footage. The footage exists of him going through houses that were being renovated and looking at things and then leaving. Now, did he deserve to lose his life in a situation like this? No. But the idea of this whole walking while black thing, or breathing while black, which is what you'll hear the left say a lot. What was my offense? It was walking while black. What was the offense of Ahmaud Arbery? It was jogging while black. What was the offense of somebody like Jacob Blake? It was driving while black. No. Oftentimes, if you look at this, they were actually committing crimes. They were doing something that required law enforcement and somebody to intervene into these situations. Now, should these people have gone and created an altercation that killed Ahmaud Arbery? No. But does that mean that the average black person walking down the street is going to get killed? Also, no. Number 8. I was taught to be an overachiever because no one expects a black woman to be smart and well-spoken. Huh. I'm not expected to have a voice in anything, and many are shocked when I do. They are astounded when I can verbalize my thoughts and opinions in multi-syllable words. Melanin ovaries do not cancel out intelligence and reason. You know who you should explain that to? The progressive left. Because the progressive left are the ones saying that meritocracy is an extension of white supremacy. They're the ones going into schools and lowering the academic standards, saying that black kids need to succeed, and in order to do that, we need to lower the academic standards for them to move up in grades. They're the ones instituting things like affirmative action, where if you don't meet the academic standing of getting into a college, they just go, oh, we're gonna ignore that. We'll just let you into Harvard. We'll just let you into Yale because you're black and you're a female and that's better for us. We love diversity. They're the ones who commit this not soft bigotry, hard bigotry of low expectations. They are the ones who look at black Americans and go, well, I don't expect much from you. I don't expect you to be smart. I don't expect you to be well-spoken, but I still want you to succeed. So let me just remove all the barriers that could, you know, build your spirit, build your character, build all of these different characteristics that would make you a well-rounded and emotionally intelligent and academically intelligent individual. And we'll just pass you through. You guys can just go through the gate. And then when they fail, and when they continue to not meet standards, or when the literacy rates drop, or the college graduation rates drop, they go, well, why did that happen? I'm scratching my head. Because they don't expect anything from you. It's not conservatives who look at black people and go, oh, they're so dumb. They're so ridiculous. They shouldn't have rights. They shouldn't have this. It's progressives who look and say that and think those things and institute policies that say as much. So this idea that this is some rule that you have to have placed on you by being a black person, actually true, but not because of the people that you think, not because of the conservatives, not because the classical liberals, not because any white right winger, and not because the white man. Although there are some white men on the progressive side that are actually pushing this narrative. So take a deep dive and really think about who expects less of black people, because it's not us. And here I am. I think I'm a pretty well-spoken black woman, and I think that's achievable for most black people, but there are people that don't, and they are passing legislation that stops that from happening and stops that from being the case. Sorry. With that note, I think we're going to end the stream on the PragerU side of things, and we're going to go just to Amla Epinobi, unapologetic, on YouTube, Facebook. We'll also be on PragerU on Facebook if you're still watching there, just not on YouTube. We'll be on Getter. We're also on Rumble, so you can go to any of those platforms and continue to listen to the show. Also on Spotify, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. But we're saying goodbye to PragerU YouTube. Head over to my YouTube and watch there. Rule number 9, never ever put your hands in your pockets while walking around a store. If you don't want to give them a reason to follow you around or call the police, your hands need to be visible at all times. Things that didn't happen for 2000 again, Alex. But no, again, this is one of those things where it's just like, as a general rule, if you don't want to look like you're stealing things, don't have your hand just sitting, both hands sitting in your pockets while you're walking around a store. That would be a rule for both white, black, Hispanic, Asian people, everybody across the board. And one that, you know, just in general would be a good thing to follow if you don't want people to think you're stealing. Does that mean you shouldn't be able to have your hands in your pockets in a store? No. If that's where you want your hands to be and that's where you feel most comfortable, well, you just go ahead and do that, darling. And I'm sure everything will be fine. But if somebody goes, hey, can I make sure you're not stealing because you got your hands in your pockets, and you go, yeah, no, I don't have anything. Guess what that is? The end of that situation. It's pretty quick. Pretty easy fix. 10, as a black man, never get into an elevator with a woman alone. Always wait for the next one. Can I just like slow blink in response to some of these rules? This is just feels like you're creating scenarios in your brain that could possibly implicate you in something. What a weird thing to do as an individual. And generally, as a man in this whole Me Too movement thing in America right now, if you guys are listening, don't do anything with a woman alone, especially if she's a progressive leftist, because that's the one, if you're going to get an accusation, that's where you're getting it from. So just maybe as a general rule of thumb for all the men there, wait for the next elevator. If you're worried that a woman that you don't know is in the elevator and could possibly accuse you of something, people are crazy. I don't trust the random people that I don't know walking around the street either. If I saw a man in an elevator coming down and I wouldn't get in the elevator either. I would wait for the next one. That's just a rule of thumb for me. It's not a particularly safe space to be in if you're in an altercation with somebody in an elevator. So it has nothing to do with being black or white or Asian or man or woman. Just as a general rule of thumb, take the next elevator, especially in today's day and age. Taylor, would you wait for the next elevator or would you take the elevator with the woman?
It depends on if the person in the elevator looked like they watch a lot of Rachel Maddow and Hassan Piker or something. If that's the case, then yeah, I'll probably pass. But if it's like a normal looking person, I'll probably just be like, okay, you're normal, we're normal, we're good. It's just an elevator.
Right. If she's got like a hashtag Me Too shirt on, maybe get in the elevator.
I mean, there are other reasons I'm not getting in the elevator in that case. It's just like not, you know, don't want to be around that type of energy. But
that aura, the aura is just really annoying. So I don't want to be around it. Yeah. Okay. So there's a qualifier. If the woman has a hashtag Me Too shirt on, wait for the next elevator. And I too would get in, you know, on the average day, if I'm like going somewhere, I'm not going to think twice before I get in the elevator with a random person. That's fine. Is that something like if you're particularly safety cautious that you would want to do? Sure. If you're that paranoid, wait for the next elevator. But I think that's a rule of thumb for men specifically with women. Just in today's day and age when, you know, accusations, as we're seeing right now with this whole Johnny Depp Amber Heard defamation case, women can just say whatever they want. And this whole hashtag believe all women thing is, you know, bringing on some problems for men in society. So maybe, you know, maybe just wait.
Yeah. And I'll just say, like, it goes both ways. Like, if you're a woman and they're, depending on the guy's appearance, like how he's dressed, like if you had this smelly, like, you know, haggard looking dangerous looking person, yep, who's not conforming to what you would expect a normal person who is safe to look like,
yep,
it's okay to take the next elevator. It's not, you're not profiling that person. So yeah, if you have, like, I would rather ride an elevator with a nice, well-dressed black person than a smelly white person,
right,
who is looks like they may be on drugs.
Yes.
You know, so it's got nothing to do with race. It's just using common sense to protect yourself. And that's okay. We act like it's not okay to make those judgments and just use basic human intuitions about,
yes,
risk assessment and how much people are actually conforming to normal society standards of acceptable behavior. So just a thought there.
100%. This idea, which is really interesting, that we've made these words like prejudice and judgment be so negative. But these things exist in us. Prejudice and judgment exist in us naturally, instinctually, because that's how we make assessments of situations and whether or not these situations will end up being safe and promote health and wellness for us. So if you walk into an elevator and you see somebody, I don't care what color they are, and you get a weird feeling of, I don't want to go on this elevator with this person, don't do it. And use that intuition, use that instinct in all cases in life. Prejudice and judgment can be very good things. And we have these ideas, and our brain works in that way for a reason. It does protect you.
I have to tell a quick story here.
Yes.
I mean, so my apartment building, I live in Los Angeles. They've had a rule up until the last, like, couple of weeks, signs everywhere saying mask required anywhere outside of your own apartment, mm-hmm, in the whole building. And I have to ride an elevator to get to my unit. And anytime someone's in the elevator and they have a mask on, or they're approaching the elevator and they're going to get in with a mask on, I will just
I'll wait.
I'll take the next one. I'll take the stairs. I'll go somewhere else. Just,
yeah,
you know, because I don't even want to go through the whole process of, like, you judging me or asking me to put a mask. It's just like, no, I'm just going around. So,
right,
yet, like, another use the signals, people.
I just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah,
yeah, you're like, I don't want to go there right now. Number 11, something I know I have to be careful of in public as a person mixed with white and black, ooh, me too, is remembering which parent I'm with and how to act. This is called code switching. I have to make sure I act okay so I'm not labeled as ghetto with my mom or whitewashed with my dad. Or what? Or what's going to happen? Tell me the scenario where you accidentally act black, whatever that means, with your white parent, or you accidentally act white with the black parent. What turmoil ensues after you do that? And this whole, I have to alter my personality and code switch for whatever parent I'm with. Give me a break. You know, these rules, if anything, highlight how attached people are to their own oppression. This is something that means something to them. It's a part of them. It's a part of their daily life. It's a part of their brain, their mind, their heart, their soul, that they need these ideas to be true in a lot of ways. And that's why these same people, when you talk to them and you go, girl, that's not true, and your life is going to be so much happier if you don't do these things, they go, no, it is true. You just don't understand. You just don't have no idea what's going on. Because they're so attached to this oppression. They're so attached to having this be the case. Next.
I think we need to have one of our black staff members at PragerU run the boards one day so everyone can meet black Amala.
Yeah.
So you can code switch into that.
Right.
I'm curious to see who that is.
Right.
Apparently you're always performing when you're talking to me.
Yeah, this is white Amala. I hope you guys enjoy her presence. Every time Taylor is producing, it's white Amala. We'll bring one of our buddies in here, Nathan. He's our black friend here at PragerU, and he'll run boards, and I'll be black Amala for you guys. And you guys can let me know which one you like better, and we'll see what turmoil ensues when I'm suddenly too ghetto.
Yeah. Everyone will be much more impressed with your ability to speak clearly.
And, yes! Oh my gosh.
Kidding, for the record.
Yeah.
I'm not a racist.
You'll be like black and intelligent?
Yeah.
This is beautiful. Okay.
Which was a real comment, by the way.
That was a real comment that I got when I first started doing this
black
show.
Black female and can speak clearly and intelligently? Oh my gosh.
So we don't say, ladies and gentlemen, that racism doesn't exist. Because it's so funny. Because that was packaged in like this compliment of like, oh, I'm going to keep watching this show. I can't believe it. But to say that you couldn't imagine somebody being black, female, and intelligent is just the funniest.
Unironically. Like, dead serious, trying to give you a compliment.
Dead serious. So racism does exist. But when I hear things like that, it just makes me hysterical. It's so funny. Okay, next. 12. No matter how cold or windy it is, my hood stays off and my earbuds slash headphones stay off my ears. I believe that this is a nod to the George Zimmerman case and what happened there. Because that, what was that kid's name?
Trayvon Martin.
Trayvon Martin. The Trayvon Martin case, because he was wearing a hoodie and had his headphones in or something to that effect. And that's when George Zimmerman came and confronted him. And this, there's something to be said about this whole idea of vigilantism and taking the police matters into your own hands. Guys, don't do that. Try not to do that. They just call the police and let them handle it, unless there's a situation that cannot be handled in time or whatever. That Trayvon Martin case was not that situation whatsoever. That what happened there did not need to happen. But again, it does not speak to a pattern that black men should constantly and consistently be afraid of wearing a hoodie and headphones and walking down the street. Like, guys, be realistic here. It's not realistic. And it's a sad thing that we've had a group of people who want to convince you that this is realistic. And I was a part of that group of people 4 years ago, but we're not there. And that's not the truth. And you'll feel so much better when you realize that that's not the truth. Next. As a black man who loves hip hop, I often have to censor the music that I listen to so I won't be judged as a thug. Newsflash, ladies and gentlemen, hip-hop is enjoyed by people of all races. Have you guys ever been to, like, a hip-hop concert? You know how many white people are hanging out in that crowd? Do you know? It's a lot. A lot of white people listen to hip-hop. I don't think it's something that makes people view you as a thug anymore. It's very much a part of modern society and a massive part of modern society. Look at these rappers who are just at peak. I mean, A-list household name celebrities now because of the music that they're making. And this idea that you're, and because you're black, you're like, oh man, they don't have Kendrick's censored version on here. They don't have the radio edit on Spotify for me to listen to. Man, when he says the N-word, people are going to view me as a thug. That's the face that I get for that. Next.
Amala's calling bull.
That's exactly what I'm calling. That is what I'm calling on that. Number 14. As a black man, if there is a white woman in line, you stand back far enough so you cannot touch her by mistake or be accused of touching her. Don't stand close enough to anybody to touch them, especially a random stranger. Just a rule of thumb, by the way. Imagine if I was in line and anybody of any race or any gender stood close enough to me to touch me. I'd be like, excuse me, sir, can you back the up? Because you're way too close to me right now. That's just a general rule of thumb that people of all races should practice. Yikes. 15. Knowing that I'll be followed when shopping in high-end stores, you, first of all, you don't know that. You don't know that. That is not, it's not like a paper that they put on the wall before you walk in that says, reminder, if you are black walking in this store, we will have an associate follow you around for your purchases. That's not the case. Now, has that happened to a person? Sure. You guys seen the movie Pretty Woman? I'm sure they would have followed her around the store too. And that's just, again, a look that people have and they go, oh, maybe I don't know if that person looks like they're going to be shopping here or not. And then they go and follow you. Now, is that something that the general person should do and that I advocate for? No. Not a good thing to do. But is it happening enough that we need to talk about it like this? No. So what does she do to mitigate this problem? I have product-related questions prepared for when they invariably ask me if I need assistance. Replying with, no thank you, I'm just browsing, makes their suspicion jump. And suddenly I have an unofficial entourage. I'm a college-educated black man about to turn 40, but I still have to play these sorts of silly games. It can be very exhausting. I will take things that didn't happen for $2,000 again, Alex, and I am racking in money. I think we're at $6,000 now in this game of Jeopardy, because this is some BS, and I'm calling BS on it. But again, these are things that we place upon ourselves and ideas that we place upon ourselves of things that we need to do to live this life that we don't have to do. And as soon as you go through a day where you stop doing that and everything turns out fine, imagine how much better your life is going to be. Just imagine. 16. Well, these all start with, as a black woman, as a black man here, as a black woman who works a swing shift and gets off work at 11 p.m., I will not take off my badge until I get inside my garage. I need to have a layer of protection to prove that I'm up, that I'm not up to no good in case I get pulled over. How many times have you been pulled over and somebody thought that you were up to no good? I would like to have this specific user answer back to me. Or is it just this idea you have of how police are going to treat you and that's why you do it? I imagine it is the latter of those two things, and that, in fact, a police officer has never pulled this woman over and told her, I think you're up to no good. Get out of the car, ma'am. Come on. Next. 17. When meeting with executives or high-ranking officials, wear appropriate attire would be business casual for others. I wear full business attire. I've found that when I dress more formally, I receive more eye contact, head nodding, and enthusiasm during conversations. This happens consistently. That's so funny. Imagine being like, they send out like a work memo. It's like, just to let you know, guys, tomorrow's casual Friday, so dress accordingly. And Jamal shows up in a tuxedo.
I notice I get more attention in the office when I wear a tuxedo. So.
Yeah. Suddenly, because like you're wearing the suit, people are like, oh, yes, that means you have something to say. I'm crying. That is so funny.
They might be giving you more attention because you're overdressed for the situation. But if that undoes racism for you, I guess, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe just like dress accordingly. It's just so, it's so ridiculous to me. And yes, there are moments like if you're going for an interview or something, you're going to work. Dressing nicer is just a good thing to do regardless. It just shows that you take your day more seriously, and it actually has beneficial effects psychologically for those of you who don't know that. It actually makes you perform better, some studies have shown, and it makes you feel more energized in your day just to like look good, feel good, know that other people perceive you as looking good and feeling good. It's a beautiful thing. We have a guy who works here. He also operates our chat. His name is Spencer. And every day, Spencer comes to work dressed to the nines. I'm talking like he could be a fashion influencer, beautiful outfits. And he doesn't have to dress like that here. Like, you can wear whatever you want at PragerU and in this office. But Spencer comes dressed, I tell you, and good for him. And I'm sure it does make people take him a little bit more seriously because he takes himself seriously.
So yeah, somehow he makes like, he was wearing shorts and like a polo with like a sweater tied together over it, and like the boat shoes and everything. He looked like he belonged at a country club,
right?
And he made it look more classy than like one of my outfits where I'm wearing like full pants, like, yeah. Short, he can pull off shorts more classily than right. The rest of us,
and yeah.
Except Will Witt, who wears flip-flops and board shorts and like a tank top, and he doesn't look classy at all. That's
no. Fine. See, there's two different types of people. And you can be a Spencer, or you can be a Will. Number 18. I work in the hospital. Anytime I get a patient out of bed and they ask me to move their purse, I make sure it remains in their sight as I move it. I also hope that it's a room with the camera just in case any discrepancy comes up. Okay. Again, good rule of thumb for anybody of any race. If somebody asks you to move a personal belonging that could have money or something valuable in it, make sure they watch you do it or they see you do it. But imagine just being like, ma'am, I'm moving your purse. I'm turning 90 degrees and I'm setting it down right over here. Again, fine, totally. But it's not because you're black. Gosh, this is making me like, I just want to run through these. I think we have three more. Okay. Number 19, don't wear any jewelry, sunglasses of the brand where you are shopping in store. As a black woman, I've had an employee rip Gucci shades off my head. They were mine, and tell me not to stretch the merchandise.
This is the daily double of things that didn't happen. So how much do you want to wager?
I'm going to make it a true daily double. I'm wagering all $6,000 for things that did not happen. Alex, I won? I now am $12,000 up. Who's going to pay me that? I don't know. I'll have to speak to my boss after the program. But again, come on now. And again, this is just a... It's placed upon a valid assumption that somebody would make. If I go to a Dolce & Gabbana store and I'm just like decked out in Dolce & Gabbana and it happens to be what they're selling in the store, they're going to go, oh, did you try that on? And are you walking out of the store with what you just tried on? Or is that something that you owned prior and you walked in here with it? Is that not a natural assessment to make as somebody who works in a store? I think so. So... Now, does that mean you have to go rip the sunglasses off somebody's head? No, but you can ask them. You buy those or are you trying them on?
Yeah, if an associate is ripping sunglasses off your head in a store, like that's a problem with the associate and how mm-hmm. they've been trained and how they're behaving, mm-hmm. not racism.
Yeah, that person should be fired. It doesn't speak to the Gucci store or America at large being racist. That just means you got some stupid sales associate at Gucci, which at a Gucci store, if a sales associate ever put their hands on a customer, do you imagine what would happen? That's like Karen Central Gucci stores. So I doubt that's happening. Doubt it. Number 20. Never let your kids play with toy guns. Okay, this is about Tamir Rice. Let's talk about this. Is this a general rule of thumb? Somewhat. Let's alter this rule. Never let your kids play with toy guns in public. That might be just a good rule to abide by and follow. You can let your kids play with toy guns at home or in the backyard with each other. But if you have a toy gun that looks exactly like, I don't know, a Glock 9, are you going to let your kid go out in public and play with it and pretend like he's pointing it at people? Which, for those of you who don't know, is exactly what happened with the Tamir Rice situation. So Tamir Rice, although I believe being 12 years old, he was a young kid in this situation. He had a gun, looked exactly like a real gun, and the police were called because the gun looked real and he was waving it around and pointing it at people. And Tamir Rice, although he was 12 years old, did not look like a 12-year-old. I believe he was well above 5 foot and over 200 pounds. So is this just a horrible, horrific situation with bad timing and bad circumstance? Absolutely. Does it speak to a general rule that because you're black, you can't buy toy guns for your kids anymore? No, but don't go and buy one that looks exactly like a real gun and then put your kid out in public in a park and let them play with it and fling it around and point it at people. That's something. And, you know, even as a parent, if my kid had a toy gun and before this whole Tamir Rice situation, that might have been something that never crossed my mind. I might have never thought, oh, if I let my kid go outside and play with this toy, the police could come and shoot him. That is horrific. And I'm sure it's something that never crossed the mind of his parents either. And unfortunately, it set a horrific precedent for what happened there. But now it's something that anybody of any race should think about with their kids, letting them go out with a toy that resembles a weapon that could take somebody's life. Unfortunate, horrific, horrifying, disgusting, but he was a victim of circumstance. And that's just something that we have to come to terms with and talk about. Last one, and finally, I find myself begging to get adequate medical care for the autoimmune disease and pain I deal with. Pain in black folks is viewed much differently than in white people. It blows my mind how a lot of people don't realize that black people get the short end of the stick in healthcare. This is something that I actually want to dedicate an entire episode to, and I'm not going to go into a rant about for that very purpose. But this idea, and this is a systemic racist narrative that I've seen persist for a really long time, that black women in particular experience poorer medical care than other people. And this is something that we're going to look into. We're going to go in and look in through the studies, and we're going to talk about the different ways that women in particular express pain and the way that women express problems that they're having with their health and the way that men do that as well, and whether or not race has something to do with that. And we are going to get to the bottom of that narrative because it's something that requires a really deep dive, and there are so many leftist infographics you can find surrounding this, and just newsflash, they are debunkable. We will talk about it. And what this shows me in general, this whole article, the fact that we can come up with 21 rules that black people supposedly have to follow and white people don't, it shows me a sign of a sick society that not through truth, but through propaganda and through narrative, we've convinced people that they have to be scared all of the time. This insinuates to me that black people, black women and men, are scared in every single situation where they are around other people of different races. You know what that creates? Segregation. Because if I was a black person and this was true, I wouldn't want to be around anybody other than other black people. And that seemingly is where we're moving as a society, where people are just segregating each other, creating black-owned business categories on Uber Eats and on Netflix and Hulu and YouTube and TikTok, where we just separate people because we think that's the answer. Ibram X. Kendi saying the way to solve past discrimination is present discrimination. This is where we're headed as a society through these lies that we continue to tell people. And you have to imagine that these are Black adults writing in these rules. Black adults who are going to have Black children and teach their Black children that from a very young age, these are rules that they need to abide by. And that is horrifying. That is what happened to me at a very large degree, at a similar degree to this. And that ruined a lot of my young life. I ended up being an activist because that's the only solution. If this is true, if what this article is saying is true, activism would be the only answer. It's the only immediate answer. Getting people to form with you in solidarity is the only thing that you would be able to do if this was truly the situation that we're in America. But it is not. And that's what's wrong with this. So as much as this is very funny and ha-ha and oh my gosh, I can't believe people think that there are different rules for different races, it's actually disgusting. And just the marker of a completely degraded society that we think that somebody could read this and go, yep, I totally relate to that, totally think that's true. And I'm sure there's a bunch of comments on this article talking about exactly that, and 241 comments, people saying, oh yeah, completely agree, I appreciate you writing this, I had a similar experience to this, or I follow rules very similar to this. Bad state of affairs, ladies and gentlemen. And I think that is where we're going to close out the show for today. If you've got, I don't know, other people in your life that might be sympathetic to an article like this or believe something like this, have a conversation with them. Maybe send them this video and have them react to my responses and see if you can spark a conversation about what they think and have a discussion with you about it, because there's several people in my life that I could send this article and they would agree in large part with what's being said. And I would love to have a discussion with people who think that. And if you do, leave it down in the comments down below. Have you had personal experiences that sort of coincide with the rules that some people have made? Has this actually happened to you? So much so that you feel like this is a rule that you need to abide by in your daily life. If that's the case, write your story down below. Tell me why you think that. Are you teaching your kids this if you are a person of color or even a white parent trying to teach your kids to be anti-racist or act in solidarity with the Black community? Let me know down below. I would love to hear it. And if I'm wrong on any of this, we'll get back on the program tomorrow and admit where we were wrong. So let me know down in the comments below. If you'd like to support us in any way, shape, or form, please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live. We're really trying to boost this channel, get these conversations out to more people so that we can discuss these ever-present topics that don't seem to be going anywhere and that we don't seem to be making any progress on. So that's the goal here. If you'd like to listen to this podcast and watch, or just listen, go to Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify, and it will be there as well under Unapologetic Live. Thank you so much for watching. I look forward to reading and responding to your comments down below. And if you'd like to support us monetarily with the things that we do, go to PragerU.com, give us a donation, and all your donations feed back into this organization, the content that we make, and everything that we talk about. So thank you so much for watching. I'll see you tomorrow for Fun Friday. We will do a week in review where we talk about all the hot stories of this week and everything that you're seeing on the news from a different perspective. See you guys then. Bye.